I'm John Nash of Bloody Elbow, and you are listening to The Parting Shot.
Sometimes these things happen in MMA.
Oh, my God!
Do you not have chills going up your spine?
You're going to be some old black hair!
I want to fight Ronnie from Jersey Shore.
You want to fight me?
Don't be scared, homie. I'll knock you out again.
This is The Parting Shot podcast brought to you by MMAOddsBreaker.com. Now here are your hosts, James Lynch and Carlin Bardsley.
Welcome to episode 164 of the Parting Shot podcast. I am James Lynch, live on location in Las Vegas. And on the other side of the world, in Taiwan, is Carlin Bardsley. Carlin, how are you?
Holy smokes, James Lynch. What an incredible set of days we have had. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm looking forward to sleeping again. But with these three incredible cards happening on Fight Week, it has been quite the journey. I'm sure you can tell me being there live.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been insane, just everything that's happened, you know, with Jon Jones being removed from the UFC 200 card to just everything that sort of unfolded with all of these events. And, you know, normally we have three guests in the show. This week we are going to just get rid of all that and just talk mainly about the fights. I would have brought someone else on this show, but kind of a tough sell right here in Las Vegas at 7 in the morning, so trying to get someone that's here at the event would be kind of tough to get on the show. So Carl and I are going to go at it head-to-head here, but first let's get to our sponsors real quick, MMAOddsBreaker.com. Last word on sports.com, and of course, nutrition supplements.
The big three.
Carlin, we're going to do a big four this week. Normally, we do a big three. We're going to start with some themes, you know, certain things that we're going to look at this past week, and then we're going to just kind of go from there and you know, ramble on a bit. So I'll try and give some behind-the-scenes stuff, and Carlin, you can give your input as well as far as what you thought of the cards. But let's start first with the first point on the big three. Carlin, what was your favorite fight this week, kind of looking at all the cards?
Oh, wow. Geez, I really have to pick one? That just seems you can pick... and unusual punishment to me, James Lynch.
you can pick one, and then we can kind of, you know, dive into some of the other fights and kind of just, you know, go over all you know, some of all the memorable fights maybe this week. But at the top of the list for you, what sort of stood out?
Top of the list, I think, was Double J, Joanna Champion, defeating Claudia Gadea. And especially just in the manner that she did it, James Lynch, because Claudia Gadea, it seemed like she had found the blueprint to defeat Joanna Champion. Those first two rounds, they were all Claudia. I don't think there's anyone in the world who would dispute that. And then all of a sudden, you know, Claudia's gas tank emptied. She couldn't keep the pressure on the way she wanted to before. And Joanna Jacek, you know, Double J, Joanna Champion, Joanna Violence, whatever you want to call her, showed that the championship rounds make champions. And she just picked Claudia apart, you know, the remaining 15 minutes. It was a beautiful thing to watch. It saved what I consider to be, you know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, otherwise a lackluster card, you know. And again, that's easy to say because, you know, we had so many great fights this week. But, you know, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you know, she showed that she can be a legit headliner, I think. The Misha Tate, Amanda Nunes fight, I'm sorry, but that was not a legit headliner to me. It was ahead of four fights on pay-per-view that were more money fights, in my opinion. But Joanna Jędrzejczyk, she showed that she is the woman, once again, at 115 pounds. And just what an incredible performance. She is a star. You know, Amanda Nunes, I'm not so sold on yet. Misha Tate is a star because she fought Ronda Rousey a couple of times. She beat Holly Holm. But I have a feeling that we have an actual strawweight fucking bona fide star here, James Lynch.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. That was the fight that really stood out to me. And actually, out of all the fights this weekend that I got to actually watch cage side, this was the only one I got to watch. I'll kind of explain a bit that later. But as far as, you know, seeing fights live, this was, you know, probably one of the best fights I've had the opportunity to see sort of cage side. You mentioned it there, you know, Claudia winning the first two rounds. And then just, you know, it seemed like Joanna just was a little bit, you know, fresher as the fight went on. It was very evident, you know, Claudia slowing down. Claudia was landing more, especially in those first two rounds. And, you know, she did hit Joanna a few times in that fight, and you know, the crowd was just right into it. You know, people were standing up during this fight, Carlin. I mean, it's to see this in a women's MMA fight just doesn't happen that often. So the women definitely brought it, and of course, there's a whole history with them on the show and their whole rivalry and you know, sort of the hatred that's there. And you know, even after this fight, Claudia's still not a fan of Joanna. You know, her actions on the show on a personal level. I know Joanna, you know, post fight was, you know, quite classy, you know, kind of giving respect to Claudia, but it was funny at the presser, Claudia just not having it. She's like, I don't buy it, you know, she crossed the line, this and that. So that kind of added just that much more to what was a you know, pretty historic and pretty you know, monumental fight between the two fighters. I'm with you as well as far as Jędrzejczyk as a star. This is the type of performance that, you know, fans that were in attendance, people that were watching at home, they will reference this fight and look at Joanna as, you know, maybe this is the fight that really sort of put her over the top. The only thing I will say, Carlin, is what do you do now with Jędrzejczyk as far as, you know, contenders? It's going to be kind of tough after this. She's kind of in that zone that, you know, Mighty Mouse Johnson's in, where, you know, there are up-and-coming fighters, but I just don't think the level of talent is anywhere close to it. So while she is a star, she might struggle with that you know, thing where, you know, she's just going to dismantle these opponents and people aren't going to be very entertained. However,
What I will say there, that she's got one very remarkable fight up next with Thug Rose. I think.
Yes,
because I think Thug Rose is going to win her next fight. I think she's going to be, you know, the next strawweight contender. I think that is a very marketable fight. Beyond that, I do believe you have a point.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see kind of how people respond to that. But yeah, for me, that was definitely one of my favorite fights. A fight that I just have to throw in here, just as you know, from just maybe sort of a selfish point of view as someone who's been a big fan of him, but that Eddie Alvarez fight against Rafael Dos Anjos the night before, Eddie taking the title, for me that was entertaining just for the fact that Eddie was a huge underdog in this fight, and here he is, he comes out and he finishes Rafael Dos Anjos. You know, Dos Anjos hasn't been finished in a fight in ages, you know, ever since basically he got that steel plate put in his jaw. So Alvarez goes out there, and just the reaction of just, you know, the media and everyone else in attendance was priceless, Carlin. It was really cool to see. I think a lot of people wrote Eddie Alvarez off, and just, you know, from an entertainment standpoint, these two guys threw leather, and it just so happened that Alvarez caught Dos Anjos and ended up finishing him. So I'd put that up there as well. And on that same card, I also want to give mention to Alan Joban and Bilal Muhammad, friend of the show. Sure. Tough as hell. You know, here's a guy who's undefeated, and you know, a lot of people felt like he was going to beat Alan Joban, but Alan Joban, it looked like he was going to finish Bilal a few times in this fight, and Bilal, you know, just pulling through and, you know, really showing that he is a UFC-worthy fighter in this fight, and that was a fight, too, that should get some props as well.
Absolutely. Eddie Alvarez reminded me of 155-pound Chuck Liddell in that fight. Like, as soon as, like, he landed that first one, he smelled blood. He's throwing those you know, like, kind of looping punches, just going off. And, you know, he knew that he had an opportunity to finish Rafael Dos Anjos. He was not going to let it slip through his fingers. Eddie Alvarez looked absolutely fantastic. You called it, brother. I was on the RDA freight train, and I make no apologies for it, because, you know, how can you not love RDA and what he's done in the division? But Eddie Alvarez, wow. Knocked my socks off, knocked RDA's pants off. It's knocked the, you know, the volume out of the crowd. It was just an incredible thing to see. As long as we're talking about that fight night card, oh, we can't not talk about the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, who probably hit the hardest punch I've ever seen anyone get hit with in my life on Roy Nelson, and did not drop him. That screwed with my mind for a couple of days, to be honest with you. Because when you look at a guy who has the physique of Derek Lewis, just, you know, pull back, get it from the leg, from the hip, everything, and kabam on Roy Nelson. And you saw the eyes kind of roll back in Nelson's head, and Nelson didn't drop. He just kept coming. Like, what do you do with something like that? I mean, Lewis got the split decision victory, but I think we all were reminded why we love Roy Nelson the way we do. He's a big fat dude who's got great jiu-jitsu, and it would take literally a Mack truck to knock the guy out.
And Derek Lewis getting props at the post-fight presser as well, too. Did you see that picture, Carlin, of him falling asleep? It's great.
I just, he's not giving worn out too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, one thing I got to say about these pressers, man, like, they bring out all these fighters, and you know, I feel bad because, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you get reporters from all over the world, so a lot of these reporters, you know, they're there for a certain fighter, and, you know, certain guys just don't get asked questions. Like, even last night at the UFC 200 presser, I think Juliana Pena got asked, like, one question. Misha Tate got asked maybe a couple questions, but here she is, you know, all banged up, probably wants to go to the hospital, her nose is broken, and no one's asking her questions. And, you know, Dave Schaller's on there, on the mic there, saying, hey, guys, Misha's about to leave, go to the hospital, can you ask her some, you know, ask a question if you need to, because she's going to leave, and no one's asking her. And it's so funny, like, every single time someone gets the mic, they're like, hi, this is a question for Jose Aldo, and you can just see Misha Tate slowly getting more and more frustrated, because it's like, fuck, I just want to get out of here. So I thought that was interesting.
And that was a quote-unquote main event. Let's talk about that for a second, if we can, James Lynch.
Yeah.
Amanda Nunes and Misha Tate, you know, I have nothing but respect for the both of these athletes. How in the ever-loving fuck did that get made the main event? It's just like, oh, they have a title. It must be the fight people, you know, want to see. Like, are you kidding me? We had Daniel Cormier fighting against Anderson Silva in the greatest of all time. We have Brock Lesnar against Mark Hunt, which is a lot, you know, a fight a lot of people came to see. We had Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar fighting for the inter featherweight title in an incredible 25-minute war. And we had Cain Velasquez stomping out Travis Happa-Brown, who got the beat, you know, the brakes beat off him even before he could throw an eye poke. But no, for some reason, they decided as soon as John Jones went down, Amanda Nunes and Misha Tate should be the main event of conceivably the biggest UFC fight card of all time. To me, it did not make sense, James Lynch.
Yeah, I was surprised too. Initially, it sounded like Hunt and Lesnar was going to be the main event, and if I was running the UFC, that would have been my choice. Now, you know, the social justice warriors out there listening to the show, I think that part of our audience is very limited, but I could see them saying, well, Amanda Nunes, you know, has the opportunity to become not only the first female Brazilian champion, but the first openly gay fighter to win a UFC title. So, you know, I could see them saying, oh, this is the women, they deserve this, all that. I'm with you, though. At the end of the day, I mean, the UFC 200 card is all about the sort of the sexy cachet. You know, when McGregor was off this card, people felt like that was sort of lost, and they you know, they made that up by getting Brock Lesnar, put Brock Lesnar in the main event. And if you look at the fights on the main card, the Nunes finish was absolutely spectacular, but the Lesnar fight was very intriguing. I mean, I'm sitting there in the media room and you know, watching this, and just the reactions of people, you don't know what's going to happen, because Lesnar's controlling Hunt. It was a great fight, and you know, Nunes, I'll give her props for the finish, but the Lesnar fight to me was just so intriguing, because you know, you have Brock Lesnar coming back after 5 years off, you have Mark Hunt, you know, could end the fight at any time with a punch. That should have been the main event, in my opinion. But hey, what are you going to do? I don't run the UFC.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth to this card. All I'm saying is I don't know why that particular fight got elevated to main event status. And let's talk about Brock Lesnar, Mark Hunt.
Yeah.
Canadian Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar from Regina, Saskatchewan. And you know what Regina rhymes with? Fun.
You know, Buffer butchered Regina name last night. Did you hear about that? He says from Regina, Saskatchewan.
And of course, does Buffer not know how to pronounce the word that rhymes?
I don't know, but I made a fuss of it on Twitter. I said, look, Bruce, it's Regina. Come on, man. Like, it's not that difficult. Like, what? Like, he just did not go and find the pronunciation. Like, he just literally read it word for word, and that's how he said it. And to me, that's kind of disrespectful to Canada. Let's be honest here.
A guy that is as big of a pussy magnet as Bruce Buffer doesn't know how to pronounce Regina? Are you kidding me? Like, come on, man. That was crazy.
Yeah. Sorry, just before you talk about Lesnar, I just wanted to mention how funny was it that Brock Lesnar got his own press conference last night. Do you see that? Like, so initially, we're all sitting down. By the way, press conferences, you know, they always get kind of started late, but, you know, Dave Schaller comes out. He says, okay, press conference is going to start in about 20 minutes, but we have Brock Lesnar up here first. And so Brock comes up, and it was funny. And, you know, it just kind of took me back to kind of how this all got brought together. You know, Brock getting, you know, apparently, allegedly, you know, $2.5 million for this fight. They had to run the SummerSlam promo during the pay-per-view. Brock probably was just like, you know what, I want to call all these shots. I don't want to have to sit in a presser and listen to people, you know, all these other people get to ask questions. I want to have my own press conference. I could totally see Brock going to the negotiating table being like, all right, well, this is what I want. And one of them I want is, I'm not doing a press conference with everyone else. Give me my own press conference. Like, I totally could have seen that conversation happening.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was that or if it was just like, you know, Brock was ready to go. And he was like, honestly, Schaller, I'm going home in 15 minutes. If you want people to ask me questions, make them ask me now, or otherwise you get shit. Like, Brock Lesnar doesn't do anything Brock Lesnar doesn't want to do. That's, you know, he loves saying that. And, you know, he proved it tonight. I mean, what a great comeback after 5 years defeating a top 10 opponent in Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt, admittedly not the greatest takedown defense in the world. Brock Lesnar, you know, that wasn't exactly the most entertaining fight in the world, but it was so intriguing during over the course of the 15 minutes that it kind of made up for it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Lesnar has his NCAA wrestling background. Mark Hunt is, you know, the bona fide one-hitter quitter. And watching those two styles play out against each other was interesting. Like, Lesnar, you could tell Lesnar still didn't want to get hit. The few times Mark Hunt hit him, he was like, oh, I didn't like that. Oh, I hurt a little bit. I'm going to be okay. It was like watching a Happy Gilmore getting nailed by the golf balls.
Yeah.
So,
but like, the cool thing about this fight, though, is like you didn't really know what was going to happen. Like there were moments when Hunt was swinging and you thought, oh, if he catches Lesnar, he could go down. And Lesnar ate a few shots last night. And then on the flip side of things, you know, Lesnar gets Hunt down. You know, is he going to get that submission? Is he going to land those shots and finish the fight? To me, there was like so many oohs and ahs. And I just got to give a little context here. So the way it worked last night with the media as far as covering UFC 200 is you had two options. You either could watch the fight's cage side, but you could not go back to the media center and do interviews. Or you could stay in the media center, watch the fights on a TV, and do as many interviews as you want as the fighters are coming back. Just the way the arena is set up. Kind of a bad setup, Carlin, to be honest. Like, most arenas, usually how it works, you know, at the MGM is, you can go cage side, watch the fight, then you can run back to the media center and do your interviews as well. You can do both. But the way the setup was, you couldn't do that. Bringing this back to this fight, what was interesting is I was in the media room because obviously I wanted video content, wanted to get video interviews. So I'm in the media room with guys like Luke Thomas, Damon Martin, you know, Heidi Fang, you know, sort of the who's who of the media. And just to be able to watch this fight with them and get their, you know, perspective on what's happening. And I think out of all fights, you know, this is one where literally like anything could happen in the fight and you really don't know how it's going to unfold just because Lesnar, like you mentioned, NCAA wrestler, big guy, you know, has that control and you know, but not, you know, obviously the most decorated guy on the ground, not the most decorated mixed martial artist. And then obviously Mark Hunt, you know, has that knockout power. So having the opportunity to watch that fight with so many great minds was so cool to see as you know, someone who's a fan of the sport and to kind of get their commentary. It was fantastic.
I guess it would be, you know, like I've done it a few times before, but again, years ago, I've been away almost as long as Brock Lesnar, but I'm thinking, yeah, like watching that with Luke Thomas, that'd be incredible. Heidi Fong, incredible as well. And then watching it with one guy who is actually fatter than both those guys combined. I mean, wow, that would have been great.
Yeah, and I should mention also Submission Radio guys were there, which, by the way, I got to hang out with those guys this week. Super, super cool guys. I know I don't like to plug too many podcasts, but they're one. They were, you know, really, really cool guys. And also Garrett Davies was there. He kept swearing and making jokes the whole fight, like throughout the entire card. So
that guy is the most hilarious guy in the world.
He's awesome. A lot of people don't like him because, he's very kind of friendly with the fighters. He does, like, you know selfies and stuff. But Garrett's awesome. If you get the chance to meet him, if you're ever in the media or anything like that, Garrett is definitely a guy you want to be hanging out with. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, we gotta get him on this show because I had him on the old show, and just you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, you get him three beers in and he's gonna go off about anything, and you know, I love guys like that.
Yeah, Garrett, actually, I sat next to him during the Jones and Gustafson fight, so I always have that memory of, you know, getting to watch that historic fight and having Garrett beside me and cracking, making wisecracks and things like that, so that was interesting. But
there's one more Garrett Davies story, and then we can move on. But I remember, like, leaving, again, at the Fight Network party in Toronto, and I was leaving with my girl at the time, you know, and I just saw Garrett on the way out, and I just shook his hand, and I don't know if I speak too fast or what. He goes, oh, yeah, you sound like a right machine gun there, don't you? And I was like, oh, all right, you know, thanks, I guess. To this day, I don't know if he was complimenting me or insulting me, but he kept, like, jiving me to, like, you know, like, give Ariel Helwani shit. He said, tell me I know who he is. He'll love that. Just tell me I know who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, like, looking back at everything that's happened with Ariel Helwani in the past month or so, that really sticks out in my head. Anyway, let's talk more about the fights.
Yeah, so, you know, we're talking about favorite fights. You know, when you kind of think of that, you think of, you know, sort of back-and-forth wars and stuff, and so that's why Jan Jacek Gadea is kind of the perfect blueprint for this question. But I got to mention some other performances as well, too. Jim Miller getting the win over Takanori Gomi to start the card off. That was awesome. My boy Gegard Mousasi. Dude, I'm sitting there interviewing Jim Miller, and I see Mousasi get the finish, and I almost let out, like, oh, shit. Because, A, you know, obviously, huge win for Mousasi. B, I going to get to interview him? That was the main thing. You know what a nightmare that would have been if Santos won and I would have had to interview him? Because, you know, obviously English isn't like 100% like good with him and everything. So I just would have been so bummed out. So to see that, I got to give props to Musasi. And then obviously Lozon being the first guy to knock out Diego Sanchez. Sanchez did have that loss to BJ Penn, but that was a, you know, doctor stoppage. This was a full flush knockout or whatever. So some good finishes this week, too, that we should probably highlight. And also got to mention on the tough finale, Kevin Lee, friend of the show, getting the knockout win over Jake Matthews. Huge, huge win for Kevin Lee. Some people saying he's not really living up to the hype. I think this fight definitely proved that. So any other fights you want to talk about as far as finishes?
As far as finishes,
Joseph Duffy over Mitch Clark.
I was just going to say, impressive. I feel so bad for Mitch Clark blowing his.
Now, I have some insight on this fight because I know Mitch Clark's dad quite well. I was talking to him actually during this fight. So I guess what happened was, I think, I don't know if it was the punch or something, but when Mitch Clark fell to the canvas, he actually tore his, I think his LCL or something like that. But post fight, Mitch was actually, in like a brace and everything. And, he was all iced up and he actually hurt his leg. So that's sort of what led to the submission. A lot of people thought it was that he, got knocked down and then, he just was kind of a fish out of water there. But no, it was the fact that he blew out his knee and Duffy was able to capitalize on that. So just wanted some clarification there because it's a lot of people saying, you just knocked him down flat and everything. But it was actually the fall that busted Mitch's knee up. But yeah.
Twice now he's blown his knee out. And I'm really concerned for the future of Mitch Clark because he's, a really accomplished fighter. But B, such a great guy. He's one of those guys that you want to see do well in the sport. Now, with two successive knee injuries like that, I don't know what's going to happen with him. But as far as UFC 200, if we can go steer the conversation back there, I mean, TJ Dillashaw looked fantastic.
Yep.
Johnny Hendricks did not.
We'll get to the disappointments on the card, but Hendricks is definitely probably at the top of the list for me. So.
But TJ looked great. He looked fantastic. Like you said, Kermit looked great knocking out Thiago Santos. And I got to ask you, James Lynch. I'm sorry, it's been on my mind ever since I knew.
I know, and you're going to give me shit for it. So it's a media scrum. So, just imagine, you're in this room full of reporters, and, you're having to ask questions. And by the way, media scrums on its own, it's kind of you have to be very, on the ball as far as asking questions. There's some people who are very greedy about the whole media scrum thing. They'll just keep asking questions. But anyways, to answer your question, no, I could not do the Musashi impression because – what am I going to do? In front of all these media people, be like, hey, Gegard, by the way, I do this great impression of you.
What you do, James Lynch, is you just ask the question in the voice. That would have stopped everyone. All of a sudden, everyone kind of goes whoosh and looks at you like, what the fuck just happened?
I wasn't able to do that, but one thing I do pride myself on was I threw Sage Northcutt off in his post-fight interview because Sage Northcutt went on this huge rant, a huge thing about how he got staph infection when he was in Montreal. So I basically followed that up with, oh, so you're saying you're never going to go back to Canada? You hate it because you got staph infection? He's like, no, that's not what I meant, man.
are we talking about disappointments? I can't talk about Sage Northcutt now?
Yeah, I mean, he barely squeaked that one out. Some people even argued that Marin could have actually won that fight. So, Sage, very green, does not belong in the UFC, in my opinion. But and the thing is,
but
I don't
he's
even
very
know.
Vascular. He's very vascular. You got to give him that.
Well, what I don't even get is, if you talk to the majority of MMA people, I mean, obviously Sage is, quite the character, but who really likes Sage Northcutt? Who really wants to see him fight? What even casual fans, other than maybe females or whoever else, are really wanting to see Sage Northcutt fight? I don't get this sort of hype behind him other than the fact he's a good-looking guy and he looks like a Greek god mixed with Zach Morris. So I don't understand sort of the appeal and why he was even on this card, to be honest, Carlin. You think of the historic, nature of this card. A guy like Sage Northcutt, this was kind of the fight that stood out to me as to why the fuck is this on the card? But
yeah, this was another one of those things that this was supposed to be a showcase fight for Sage Northcutt. Yeah. I mean, he keeps getting every opportunity in the world just handed to him. And really, Cody Pfister, he didn't come out of that fight looking particularly great. Vinny Barbarino fucking took him to school. And then we have Ricky Martin. Sage Northcutt barely gets by Ricky Martin. It's just, he was on UFC 200 to look good. That is the reason Sage Northcutt was on this card. And when you look at his post-fight comments, it doesn't, to me, imply someone, James Lynch, who has an interest in getting better. He was like, when he was holding me against the cage, he wasn't really doing anything. Well, if he wasn't doing anything, why weren't you, reversing position? Why weren't you getting out of there? No, he was doing something. You weren't doing anything, Sage Northcutt. you know, whether he wants to, like, just, you know, quit fighting and be Iceman in the new Top Gun remake, I don't know. I can't make his career decisions for him. But if he wants to be an elite level fighter, this young kid, and admittedly, he, you know, he's young, he's green, but he's got a way to go.
Well, let me mention something that I didn't actually get a chance to talk about on our UFC Ottawa post-fight show. I actually spoke to a couple sources while I was down in UFC Ottawa about Sage Northcutt when he was training at TriStar. And everything that you heard in that story that came out about his dad being controlling and trying to control, you know, sort of the sparring and things like that and just really disrupting his training, that is 100% true. And in fact, the source that I spoke with, who I want to keep a little anonymous here, but, you know, he basically said that Sage Northcutt's going to be a guy that's going to have, you know, a lot of problems later on in life because he literally doesn't know anything other than what his dad's been telling him, and you know, he's being too coddled, so to speak. So you mentioned the fact that he's not getting better. His dad's the biggest reason why, and I have no doubt that, you know, the reason we're not seeing him get better and better is because his dad just won't let him do his own thing. You know, you're at TriStar and your dad's coming in and you're intervening on training. For us, Ahabi's one of the best coaches in the world. You're only hurting a guy like Sage Northcutt, having that reputation, and also, you know, not listening to a prestigious coach like For Us, Ahabi. So that's the reason why Sage isn't getting any better. And yeah, there's going to be a fight if it's not this one. I mean, it's going to catch up to him. I mean, he lost to Barbarena. And you know what else bothered me, too? He also mentioned this in the post-fight. It was, you know, Northcutt talked about the fact that, well, you know, I had the sore throat in the fight against Barbarena, so I literally couldn't breathe and stuff. And I'm like, I get that, dude, but, you know, you got to be humble in defeat. And he certainly, you know, brings up the excuse of, you know, why he lost in that fight. And I think that is also something that he needs to work on as well as a martial artist, is, you know, learn a bit of humility here and, you know, learn from your mistakes. It just seems like he did not look any better in this fight than he did against Barbarena. So that's all I got to say.
Sage Northcutt is 2016 Todd Marinovich. Okay. I understand.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Great reference. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So one more thing. I still want to talk a little bit about Johnny Hendricks. What do you do with Johnny Hendricks right now? I'm sure GSP is chomping at the bit for a rematch after watching that performance against Kelvin Gastelum. But I got to think that he never goes back to 170 again. Yeah. Misses weight. You know, Johnny always seemed like a cool guy every time I talked to him. But nevertheless, yeah. I mean, like, he's at a crossroads in his career. I don't know. I don't know what you do with him. Does he reinvent himself at a higher weight class the way we've seen other fighters do?
No, and I got some more inside information that I got this week. Just talking again to some people this week. So let's talk about the fact that he missed weight. You know, Lutrition is the guy that, you know, helps him get down there. And anyone who knows me, you know, knows that I'm a big fan of Lutrition. I've had him on the show, you know, plenty of times. And everything I was told was basically that Johnny was just very uncooperative this camp. Lou was telling him to do certain things. Johnny wouldn't do it. You know, Lou's going to get the blame for this. I saw a lot of people throwing Lou under the bus, even though Lou's had, you know, other clients that he's done, you know,
the
really
Scotsman,
great work with.
Well, what's his name that hates him?
Oh, I don't even want to mention that guy's name because literally I hate that guy. And any chance he gets, he's because, you know, yeah. And if people know who I'm talking about, it's the same guy who gets, you know, the same weight cutting specialist on his show all the time and talks about how great he is. Meanwhile, anyways, I don't even want to go into that because I don't like that guy. But, you know, feel free to message me privately and I'll explain who that is. But no, Lou Giordano is going to get the blame for this, unfortunately. And it's not his fault. If your client's not listening to you, that's on the client as far as I'm concerned. And Johnny, what is he doing? He's done. This was the fight I literally wanted to see. Where does he go from here? Because, Carlin, the big question coming into this is, you know, is it the fact that Wonderboy is that good, or is it the fact that Hendricks has lost a step since the Lawler fight? And the fact of the matter is, Hendricks has lost a step. Even if he does go up to 185, he's so small for 185 as it is. You saw him against Thompson, who's a welterweight. He's going to get destroyed. I think this is it for Johnny Hendricks. The UFC will probably give him another fight. Probably he'll be at middleweight, and I think he loses again, no matter who it is. I don't think Hendricks has anything left in the gas tank. Nothing taken away from Kelvin Gastelum, but I just think that this is a guy who's, you know, a UFC champion, and now he doesn't look anything close to what he was. And, you know, when I spoke to Kelvin Gastelum post-fight, I asked him that question, you know, did you feel like Johnny Hendricks, you know, had lost a step? And he agreed with me. He felt that, you know, this wasn't the Johnny Hendricks that we've seen in the fights with George St. Pierre and with Robbie Lawler and everything else. And, yeah, just disappointing. And I don't want to use the USADA word there, but you do have to wonder, you know, ever since that, he has not looked like the same fighter. And since we're on Johnny Hendricks and kind of talking about Sage Northcutt, let's stick with the disappointments of the card. One I want to kind of throw out here, and to no fault on her own, just the fact that she's had the long layoff, but Kat Zingano, yeah. A lot of people were picking her to beat Juliana Pena, picking her to, you know, get her title shot, and that did not happen. Juliana Pena, got to give props to her. She went out there and did what a lot of people didn't think she would do, and that is she won a fight against Kat Zingano. Your thoughts on the fight?
I was shocked. I mean, Zingano looked great early, and then it just fell apart for her. I don't really know what else to say about it. Juliana Pena, you know, like fought she was like she was in another barroom strap, and that's the last place you want to be against someone like Juliana Pena. Full marks to her for her performance, because you know, she took a very game, a very able athlete in Kat Zingano and made her look like an amateur at points, to be quite honest with you. Yeah. And as far as what Juliana Pena does, I heard someone said to me on Twitter that she's prepared to sit out until she gets the title.
She confirmed that at the press conference last night, Carl, and she is willing to sit out and get the winner of that fight. And it was funny because, like, Mike Bond, asked her, kind of sell yourself for this fight. And, she basically said that she's won 8 in a row, not 4 in a row, because she counts the fights on the Ultimate Fighter and everything else. And Manya Nunez, gave the politically correct Brazilian answer, which is like, I'm the champion. I fight whoever they give me, It's, I don't think they'll do that next. I think they'll probably give Holly Holm the shot if she beats Shevchenko, but you never know. Pena's deserved the shot. I'll give her that, as much as, people
really
aren't. I mean, she's Carlin, she hasn't lost. I mean, that is one thing we have to look at. And she just beat someone who's a former title challenger.
And you know what? I love Kat Zingano as much as the next person. But again, huge layoff. I've got Juliana Pena like 4 deep as far as title challengers go. But then again, like, if she really is prepared to sit out and wait for that, it worked for Tyron Woodley. So maybe it'll work for her, too.
Well, my whole thing is, too, I mean, okay, you've got Holly, you've got, potentially Ronda coming. Like, I don't think they're going to do, I mean, maybe they will, I don't know. But I can't see them doing Ronda and Amanda Nunes. That just seems like for some reason, I think the fight they got to do is either Tate and Rousey or Holm and Rousey. I don't know. But it's just, for some reason, I feel like that's not going to happen. But, there isn't really anyone else in that division that stands out. And I know Pena's not, getting these, spectacular finishes and things like that. But, she is deserving. If we're calling this a sport, she does have the winning streak. We do have to kind of look at that. But
if we're calling this a sport, we're saying on the night where we saw Brock Lesnar fight Mark.
I know, that's you're right. I shot myself in the foot with that one. But I agree with you there as far as, for Pena. And the thing is, too, Pena's not doing herself any favors. Obviously, this wasn't brought up in the presser, but, the issues with the assault. And then just kind of being a little bit rude to the media last night. Bond asked her the question, about winning 4 in a row. And she kind of was like, actually, I've won 8 if you count the Ultimate Fighter. And that's not going to win you over with fans.
Nobody counts the Ultimate Fighter.
I know. And the thing is, I really want to like Pena. She's from the West Coast where I'm from. And, she's, very attractive as well, too, but just not doing any favors with the media. Just that doesn't come across very well as a very likable person, and she didn't come across very likable on the show either. So that's probably going to hurt her for her title shot chances. So yeah,
ask,
we'll kind of see what
happens. Josh Hill. Okay, Josh Hill's been on the show a million times. Ask Josh Hill about Juliana Pena on the Ultimate Fighter. Okay, I'm not even going to like go into it deeply there, but yeah, if you ever have a chance to talk to Josh Hill, Josh is one of the most laid back, cool guys I've ever met in my life. One of the few things I've ever seen him get tuned up about is like, oh, fucking Juliana Pena.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Now, sticking with disappointments, Rafael Dos Anjos, again, big favorite in this fight. He didn't win. I mean, he's got to be on this list as well, too, as far as, not coming through. People thought after his performance against Pettis that he was going to reign the division for a while. That did not happen. And you have to wonder if the layoff, it affected him this fight. But, he has to be on the list for disappointing fighters. And also, we could throw Mitch Clark on there as well, too. Obviously, not getting it done against Joseph Duffy. I picked Mitch Clark in this fight. Not even home bias aside, I felt like he did have some ways to win this matchup. But this fight couldn't have gone any worse for him as far as fighting a guy like Joseph Duffy. I thought he would have hung in there. He fought Chiesa, went to a decision, and he fights Joseph Duffy and he loses in the first round. Mitch Clark is probably going to get cut after this fight, I would think. Carlin, what do you think?
I would hope not. Because again, like his two most high-profile losses seem to be, due to knee injury, but we'll have to see how that shakes out. As far as disappointments, I think you hit them all on the head there. But as far as, nice surprises and, people who you are on record, James Lynch, as saying, I don't give a shit about him, what about Doohoe Choi?
Yeah, no, I know. I shot myself in the foot with that one. He looked great. He looked great. And, I apologize to any of the fans of Doohoe Choi. He's a superstar. And even in his post-fight interview, he's doing all the right things. And, beating a guy like Thiago Tavares is a very good win for him. he's a guy that they can market. You know, how often have we seen guys come over to the UFC, you know, from the Asian market and struggle? Do Hoo Choi seemingly like the real deal and also has the personality to back it up. So big win for him. And you know, again, getting overshadowed on all these cards. But he has to be noted here on the podcast. And I will give him the time, Carlin, because I didn't give him the time on the pre-show. So
there we go. Beautiful. I love it when you can stand up and admit you were wrong. You know, good on you. And, you know, as far as everything else on that card, we have to talk about Gray Maynard. I thought Gray Maynard was a lamb being sent to slaughter against Fernando Bruno. I really did. And I don't say that as a compliment to Fernando Bruno. I just thought Gray Maynard just has absolutely nothing left. But he proved me wrong. You know, Gray Maynard showed some flashes of the Gray Maynard of old. I don't know that he could do that against elite competition. But he looked damn fine against Fernando Bruno for 15 minutes, you know. Fernando Bruno gassed early. Maynard shows he still has a gas tank. He can still implement his game plan and take the fight where he wants to take it against an opponent like Fernando Bruno. So what do you think about Gray Maynard at this point? Because, like, honestly, we're all, like, hoping that he retired before he died at one point. Now all of a sudden he seems like he has new life.
I don't think he has new life. I wasn't that impressed with this performance, to be honest. I know Bruno's, you know, a tough guy and not really well known, but I still think if he fights, you know, sort of anyone in that division that's, you know, got some knockout power, I worry about Gray Maynard. And again, we've talked about this before. Guys that move down a weight class older in their, you know, as they're older in their career, it usually doesn't end well for them. If his chin was bad at 55, you know, taking off that extra weight, going down to 45 seems pretty unlikely. And I hate to talk badly about the guy. Greg gave a pretty good post-fight interview. But, you know, I don't see it ending well for him, and I don't think he's the guy that he once was. You know, it's funny, here he is fighting Fernando Bruno, and on the card, you know, the next night, Frankie Edgar's fighting for an interim title. So it just shows you kind of the difference of how, if that fight between them could have gone, you know, where their careers would have been. But Gray Maynard, I think he's got a couple more fights, and then I think that's it for him. So that's my personal opinion.
All right, yeah, let's dive into Frankie Edgar. Like, sure. Frankie Edgar, like, I was shocked because I picked him going into this fight.
So did I. So did a lot of people. Yep.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of us were just blind to the fact that stylistically, Jose Aldo is just a bad matchup for him with the length, yeah, with the reach, with the fact that Edgar had to keep running in with those little bam-bam punches from the Flintstones and everything. Like, yep. Jose Aldo made the takedown defense look so easy. And I think a lot of us kind of forgot, you know, that Jose Aldo, when he is on his game, is the best. I think, yeah, we forgot a lot about, you know, about how dominant he was. And we said, focus on, oh, what about USADA? What about the fact that, you know, like, Conor knocked him out in 13 seconds? Okay, well, Frankie Edgar didn't have the advantage of, like, trash-talking Jose Aldo for 18 months and just driving him completely insane. Jose, yeah, Aldo came to fight tonight. He didn't come to talk. And he is now the king, again, at 145 pounds. And when Conor McGregor gets put away again by Nate Diaz in a couple of months, it's going to be very interesting to see whether Conor even wants to fight Aldo again.
Yeah, I have my doubts of McGregor getting back down to 45. I've talked about this before. But yeah, you know, here's the thing. You know, we had sort of the catalyst for, you know, sort of the post-USADA world in Henan Barao. You know, Henan Barao moving up to 45 and, you know, still not finding success, you know, former dominant champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was sort of, you know, my thinking as well for this fight. And I think a lot of people thought the same thing as far as, you know, his loss to McGregor, that, you know, post-USADA he wouldn't look good. But he proved those doubters wrong. And you know, I think that Aldo still is, you know, the best at 145 as far as that division goes. I think if they had a rematch with McGregor, I'm not so sure how that fight would go. Assuming McGregor could make the weight. So, you know, got to give props to Aldo. I was wrong in this fight. I thought Frankie was going to be able to finish him, and he wasn't able to. And, you know, where does Frankie Edgar go from here? You know, does he maybe think about going down to bantamweight at this point and maybe fighting someone like Dominic Cruz, who, you know, could use some dance partners, especially for that card coming up in Vancouver, because that's what it seems like where he's going to fight on. But, yeah, I'm not sure. It's interesting. But Jose Aldo, you know, obviously silencing those doubters. We kind of talked a little bit about, you know, kind of in this fight, you know, some surprises as far as Aldo, you know, showing that he still is the real deal. That was kind of a surprise for some people. But let's talk about sort of the biggest surprises this week. A lot of people point to Eddie Alvarez. You know, I don't consider that a big surprise because I picked Alvarez to win, but one that kind of you know, stood out for me was the Miesha Tate fight. And you know, I talked about it on the show last week. I was wrong about this big time. Actually, my parlay last week was completely wrong because I picked Edgar and Tate. But you know, I figured that Amanda Nunes would you know, put on some pressure against Miesha Tate in this fight, and you know, put her in some bad spots early on, but I did not expect her to finish Miesha Tate in this fight. So that to me was one of the biggest surprises. Knowing how tactical Miesha Tate is, you know, Holly Holm, probably the best striker in that division. Tate was able to weather the storm in that fight and, you know, be very tactical and get the fight to the ground. Now, in this fight, Tate just did not look good at all in this fight, Carlin. I don't know what you thought, but, you know, she had some issues cutting weight. I don't know if you heard about that. You know, she barely made the deadline as far as, you know, cutting weight. So you have to wonder if there was some, you know, ill effects of that in this matchup. But can't take anything away from Amanda Nunes. She was like a pit bull on Miesha Tate. Went in for the kill. She rocked her. I knew the second she landed that first right or whatever that it was game over for Miesha Tate. Tate sort of running away, looking very sort of lethargic, and Nunes gets the finish, and you know, it gets a submission in this fight to claim the title. So to me, that was one of the biggest surprises on this card as far as you know, performances you know, throughout this week.
Yeah, that was a shocker for me too, because Miesha Tate handpicked Amanda Nunes to be her opponent.
Yeah, that's true.
And Nunes looked like she was there to fight, and Miesha Tate looked like she was there, I don't know, to do a photo op or something. I don't know what Miesha Tate's thinking was. Again, you know, maybe there was some issues outside of the weight cutting. I don't know. But fact of the matter is, Miesha Tate looked absolutely terrible. She tapped to a face crank. It wasn't even an RNC. Like, it was across her face. And Miesha Tate just seemed to want out of that fight right away. Yeah. The first opportunity she had to tap and say, listen, I want to go home, that was it. And it's interesting to me because, you know, the story arc of Miesha Tate's career, she looked so great coming out of Strikeforce, and then she ran into Ronda Rousey, okay? And then, like, she again reached the top of the UFC bantamweight heap, again, runs into the wall named Ronda Rousey. Now, all of a sudden, we're in, you know, a post-Ronda world, if you will, and Miesha Tate was an upset of the century against Holly Holm. All of a sudden, Miesha Tate, who was considering options outside the sport a year ago, is now headlining, for lack of a better word, but, you know, headlining the biggest UFC card in the history of time. And she pissed it all away. I don't know what to say about Miesha Tate anymore, other than, like, no matter what she does, I'm sure she'll surprise me.
Yeah, and how about that Vegas Dave guy who bet $1 million on Miesha Tate? Remember that? Did you hear about that before the fight?
He bet on Tate to beat Holm. Did he bet another million?
This whole thing going into this fight, this high baller, whatever his name is, it's called Vegas Dave. He went out there, he posted on TMZ and everything. He said he bet $1 million on Miesha Tate, so he lost $1 million last night, apparently.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you get for being a douchebag. All right. As far as other surprises on this card, one I'll kind of throw out there, and, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts as well. Cain Velasquez, and, you know, not a surprise in the sense that, you know, we didn't think he was capable of beating Travis Brown, but the way he looked last night, Carlin, he looked like he hadn't missed a beat, you know, from, you know, some of his other performances. I thought he looked great against Travis Brown, and going in there, and everything okay on your end there? He went out there, and, you know, he dismantled Travis Brown. I thought that was a great performance, and the type of performance that I think has earned him a title shot. What were your thoughts on the Velasquez fight?
Well, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, quite frankly, Travis Brown was there to fall down. I have absolutely no regard for Travis Brown, other than that incredible upset over Overeem. That's, you know, I'm sure that that I'm locked in your memory for that. Just the amount of decibels I emitted during that fight. But Travis Brown, if he wasn't going to poke Cain Velasquez in the eye, he was not going to win the fight. He didn't get a chance to poke Cain Velasquez in the eye. He did not win the fight. And we can make all the C-level Cain jokes we want, but Cain Velasquez is a very, very dangerous dude. So if you put him against Stipe Miocic, we are going to see an actual war, ladies and gentlemen.
And isn't it funny how one fight can really just change the perception of fans? Like, people saying that Cain's done and everything else after this. I mean, he looked great last. I was just happy for him, you know, to be honest, Carlin, because he's a guy that, you know, really sort of got some excitement in the heavyweight division as far as some of his performances and things like that. And, you know, obviously being one of the true athletes in the heavyweight division, if you kind of look at the history of the heavyweight division anyways, that is. I'm happy for him. And, you know, beating a guy like Travis Brown, who's a scumbag, I'm more than happy to see him to get the win there. Were there any other surprises for you? I guess sort of one other one that I'll kind of throw out there, although I knew it was only a matter of time, but Joe Lozon knocking out Diego Sanchez. You know, Sanchez known for his durability, but, you know, it had to catch up to him at some point. The chin always does go. You know, we've seen this happen with, you know, Chuck Liddell and guys like Sam Stout, where, you know, they're known for their iron chins. It just goes at some point, and it happened last night with Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, Daniel Sanchez, life caught up with him. It happens. I mean, like, combat sports is a very, very unforgiving beast. I don't know if it's a surprise or not, but we have to talk about Daniel Cormier and Anderson Silva. Because as I'm watching this fight, the only thing I'm thinking to myself is, oh my God, this is Larry Holmes beating up Muhammad Ali all over again.
Yeah. That's a great reference. I was kind of thinking, this is Anderson Silva now. This is what you know, new fans of the sport are going to remember him as. It's like, Jesus. So props to him, though, for taking the fight. You know, people didn't like the fight, as far as Cormier just taking it to the ground. But I understand it. I mean, taking a fight on a couple days' notice. And, you know, the main thing here is to win. And, you know, he had a catalyst to beat Anderson Silva. That is, use your wrestling, get him to the ground, hold him there, do whatever you need to do, and get the job done. Kind of took the wind out of the sails on this card, if I don't mind saying, just because, it wasn't the most entertaining fight. There were moments. I mean, Anderson hit him a few times, and Cormier, you know, was willing to stand and trade for a bit, but
until he got hit with that body kick, and he was like, no, this is stupid, I'm gonna put him against the fence again.
Exactly.
It's just smart if you're Daniel Cormier, but you know, that was the one smart thing. You know, Daniel Cormier is very smart in his fight execution. Daniel Cormier, unless I'm missing something, is an idiot when it comes to contract negotiation, because Daniel Cormier lost half of his base purse that he was going to get against John Jones to fight Anderson Silva on 2 days' notice. Unless he got, like, huge points on the back end, and he may have, you know, unless he did, Daniel Cormier is an idiot for taking this fight in the first place. There was no upside to Daniel Cormier taking this fight against Anderson Silva on 2 days' notice unless he got literally a zillion dollars. Literally, James Lynch. I don't know what he was thinking. But again, he was there. So, you know, I had some people telling me, well, you know what? He was going to want the exposure of being on UFC 200. And really, when people watch that fight, are you going to say, oh, my God, I need to see Daniel Cormier fight again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, I imagine he did get paid, Carlin, because this is a huge card. I mean, if he would have said no, that would have been a pretty big hit to not have him on the main card. I know it's a stacked card, but, you know.
Would it have been that big of a hit? Because all of a sudden you're left with what? Oh, yeah, your main event of Misha Tate and Amanda Nunes?
Yeah, I think it takes away some, you know, the fact that, even though he's past his prime at this point, a guy like Anderson Silva, he still adds sort of that kind of sexy name to the card. I think that's what the UFC, I mean, we were talking about it, you know, just as media yesterday. Anderson Silva probably was the best replacement you can have. It's a safe win for Cormier, and Silva's a big enough name that, you know, anyone, any casual fan knows who Anderson Silva is. So I think it was the right move, as opposed to going the route of, you know, my boy Gegard Mousasi, or, you know, someone like, I don't know, like Dan Henderson or something. I think that Silva was the right choice, and even though the fight wasn't entertaining, I think it did help the card having him on the event. So that's what I got to say about that. What else we got here? We talked about disappointments. We talked about biggest surprises. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of cover, from this? I should mention that I kind of was kicking myself. So I got here Thursday morning, and of course the John Jones news broke on Wednesday night. And I guess, you know, the media that was here, it's funny because I fly in. And, I get to my hotel, check in, and pretty much immediately go to the fight night because of the time change and everything. Here in Las Vegas, the fight cards actually start at like 2 o'clock, 2:45 around there. So I landed, go to the press conference, and I just see like the media, and everyone's tired. Everyone's in a bad mood. People are drained. You know, they don't want to talk or anything because, you know, they're up late the night before because they're doing all this work, and then they find out that John Jones is out. And actually, I found out that John Jones was out because the next morning as well, because, you know, I went to bed early, went to, you know, get my flight out to Las Vegas, and I see the news, and I was like, oh my God, like, what are the chances of this happening? Like, it's pretty crazy. So that definitely was kind of interesting as far as finding all that out and kind of seeing that. But I gotta say, it was pretty crazy to see that kind of all unfold and sort of see the media's perspective as well, kind of getting their thoughts on, you know, Jones being off the card or whatever.
John Jones cannot get out of his own way. I mean, what is the deal with this guy? He's probably the most, you know, naturally talented mixed martial artist that we have ever seen in our lifetime. But, you know, like, he just seems fucking bent on fucking up all the time. If I could drop an Axl Rose reference, you know, like, it's almost like you watch Axl Rose in 1988. He's a king of the world, okay? Appetite for Destruction has sold 17 million copies. He can do anything he wants. And he chooses to piss it all away. Yeah, Use Your Illusion comes out, still pretty impressive, Then all of a sudden he's like, no, I don't need Izzy Stradlin as a guitarist anymore. I don't need Steven Adler as a drummer anymore. I'm going to keep firing anyone that looks at me funny. I'm going to do everything I want to do, and it's going to be great. Well, the last thing you ever want to give a control freak is total control, because nothing happens. And now we're seeing John Jones on the top of the heap. And when John Jones' life is left up to John Jones, nothing good happens. Okay? His title is gone. He hit and run a pregnant chick, for crying out loud. The cocaine addiction, everything else. Like, this is what happens when you leave a guy to his own devices who is clearly not prepared for it. He came out in that press conference with his crisis management consultant. That is literally their title. What are they doing? Because instead of managing crises, plural, they should be getting out ahead of it and saying, John, maybe we should get you a driver. John, maybe we should check your supplements against USADA's list.
Yeah.
Like, it makes absolutely no sense to me. No one has had more and thrown it away more than John Jones or possibly Axl Rose. Axl Rose had to wait till 2016 to get his 1988 stadium tour back. I hope it doesn't happen to John Jones that way, because combat sports is way less forgiving than rock and roll.
And of course, the news came out as well that his B sample failed. So, yep. I mean, if Jones is, you know, is in fact, you know, I don't know the whole sort of the side of the suspension side of things, but everything I'm hearing is that he could get up to 2 years, and that, I mean, that's devastating for his career at this point. And obviously, he'd probably never fight DC again, because DC's, you know, be like 39 years old. So I can't see him sticking around and waiting around for John Jones. And just, it's a big hit to the division too, if Jones is out. So I'm curious to see how this kind of unfolds. But the one thing I will say, and you know, this is kind of just selfishly something that I thought, but I kind of smirked a little bit when I found out the news, only because Malky Kawa, who I don't like at all. I think that guy's a bit of a bully and a bit of a kind of like a thug
Does
manager.
Anyone like Malky?
Some people, I guess, but I'm not a fan, but I just love to see him try and spin this shit, because Yoel Romero, he had his issue, and now John Jones here. I find that a little bit funny. How are you going to spin this one, Malky? I got to ask you. So that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, well, last point on the fights. Can we talk about Will Brooks?
Yes. I thought a little bit disappointing, but you know, at the end of the day, it was short notice. He got the win. What were your thoughts on the fight?
Well, I picked Ross Pearson in this fight because I thought Will Brooks was going to come in flatter than he did. But, you know, his reflexes looked fantastic. He kind of gave away the third, but I think he gave away the third because he knew he had the first two in the bag. So I'm not going to hate on him too hard for that. But what is he thinking calling out Eddie Alvarez after that fight? In his heart of hearts, does he really think that they're going to make Eddie Alvarez versus Will Brooks the fight you didn't see in Bellator? Like, come on, man. Like, I know Will has, you know, sacrificed great personal, a lot of things to get here. But does Will Brooks, his heart of heart, thinks that, hey, we've got Dana White and a Chinese conglomerate, you know, they just spent $4.2 billion on the company. The thing they want to do now is promote an event between two guys who made their bones not being in the company. Like, come on, Will, you're smarter than that.
Yeah, and one thing I should mention, you know, in the pre-fight for this, you know, I mentioned if Brooks gets an impressive performance, maybe he could be closer to a title shot type thing. But this is the type of performance that will not do you any favors. I think his sort of thinking as far as you know, calling out Eddie Alvarez is, you know, if I say something, maybe just maybe it'll resonate with either the fans or Dana White or someone, and you know, hopefully he was basically just throwing like a Hail Mary at the end of the football game and hoping something would happen. But I agree, Brooks is not anywhere close to a title shot at this point, in my opinion, with that type of performance. I know it was short notice, but yeah, that's not going to do you any favors. You know, a guy that was also on this card who I wouldn't mind seeing actually squaring off with Brooks, I don't know if it's too soon or not for him, but I'd like to see him fight Kevin Lee. I know Kevin Lee wants to fight Aya Quinta on that New York card, but I'd like to see Kevin Lee fight a guy like Will Brooks and see, you know, is Brooks really the real deal as far as, you know, what he did in Bellator? You know, if you can get past a guy like Kevin Lee, who's kind of an up-and-comer, I'd be interested to see what that is. But I don't know. There's a lot of contenders in the lightweight division, and there's a lot of options for Will Brooks, and I think that you can't go wrong pairing him up with pretty much anyone in the division, just because there is a lot of options.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about Kevin Lee until you said that. Yeah,
and they had a bit of history. I know on Twitter, Kevin called him out and stuff. So there's a little bit there.
And Ai Quinta is not going to fight him again. Like, let's be honest with that. So yeah, Kevin Lee needs a dance partner. He looked fantastic over a guy like Jake Matthews. Will Brooks, he's not getting anywhere near Eddie Alvarez right now, especially with that performance over Ross Pearson. Okay, take my money, I'll do it.
Good stuff. Anything else you kind of wanted to touch on these cards? Again, I don't want to leave anything out. Normally, I know some people have asked me to do, like a behind-the-scenes podcast talking about kind of my experience and stuff. That's why I did the video blogs for this thing. So I'll have one out actually later today. Just trying to get some behind-the-scenes stuff. Nothing really crazy happened this week as far as, you know, the behind-the-scenes and everything. But I will say it's fun, man. This is something I've never got to do before, doing three events in a row. Having a chance to do all these events, you know, you basically wake up, go and try and get as much stuff as you can. I think the cool thing is that, you know, because there's so many people here, I've actually got some pretty good interviews with people that aren't even on the card. I got to talk to Jim Norton, Carlin. That was kind of cool.
Beautiful.
Just grabbed him, while he was at the WANs. I talked to Jeremy Stevens, who was hanging out. Got some other interviews. Talked to John Volante at the Expo. He just happened to be walking around. Talked to him a bit. So, you know, I'm the guy that I'm always looking for that interview. So if I see anyone at all, I, you know, quickly, you know, politely ask them if they have the time and do something. So if they want to do an interview. So that was kind of fun for me, just getting a lot of content this week. I gotta tell you one quick thing actually last night, which is kind of funny. So I'm looking for Dwayne Ludwig after Dillashaw's win, because, you know, Ludwig's a pretty, you know, pretty good interview, lots of good insight and stuff like that, but I can't find him because, you know, we're in the media room. By the way, this media room super super tiny and tight, like the fighters literally have to like do that thing, you know, where someone's at a table and they have to like pull their chair in. That's what it was like in the media room when the fighters were even trying to get to the scrum, because it was so small. Whoever designed T-Mobile Arena, you guys got to do a better job of the media setup. It's just way too small for something like that.
Yeah, and now the NHL is going to be there, but you know what? No one's going to cover the NHL in Vegas anyway, so it'll work out.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I'm looking around. I can't find Dwayne Ludwig, and sure enough, he was just outside the door. I guess I missed him, so I grabbed Lester Bowling, and Bowling was, you know, he was good, gave some good answers, but I was like, damn it, because I literally, as soon as I finished interviewing Lester Bowling, there's Dwayne Ludwig, and he was with Gareth Davies, and I was like, fuck, and then, of course, they had to leave. So, and I got to mention my Robbie Lawler story, which I was telling you a bit off air there. So last night, I get out of the press conference, and, had my camera on me again, and, ready to go kind of pack it in for the night, and I see Robbie Lawler, and I'm like, holy shit, I got to get an interview with this guy. You know, Robbie, not maybe the greatest interview, but it's fucking Robbie Lawler, man.
Yeah.
So go up, talk to Lawler, and I say,
my daughter's,
hey, man,
favorite fighter.
Yes, and I was like, hey Robbie, do you have a quick second for an interview? And Robbie's like, sure. And then this UFC PR lady swoops right in and says, oh, Robbie has to get going. And I'm like, hey, I just need like a minute. And she says, sorry, he has to get going. So, yeah. That's these things happen. Other fighters that I saw, during this International Fight Week that were there, Luke Rockhold was there last night, obviously supporting DC. I saw Max Holloway here. Anthony Johnson was here. I know they showed them all kind of, in the crowd and everything like that, but lots of fighters were here, and lots of fighters even from other organizations that weren't here. I saw Mike Richmond yesterday from Bellator. I saw Eric Prindle, walking around in the MGM just looking at his phone. Actually ran into Jocelyn, Carlin. That was pretty cool. So, didn't get a chance to see Jocelyn when I was at UFC Ottawa because she lost her fight, and so she didn't come out for the media scrum. So literally, I'm just walking outside the MGM, and I walk right past her. And I was like, "Hey, how's it going?" Because it's we've had her on the show, obviously,
sure,
and
sure,
friend of the show, had a quick chat with her as well. And this was right after the Jędrzejczyk fight, so it was kind of cool to get her perspective on the matchup, being in that division. It's cool, man. It's this whole week has been really great. And one last thing I'll kind of say on this, we'll move on the show. Probably the most fun part for me of doing this whole experience is just getting a chance to interact with other media members. You kind of become like really good friends with these people throughout the week, because you're kind of in the same boat trying to get interviews. Got to meet Luke Thomas. Luke Thomas actually knew who I was, Carlin, which I thought was really cool. I guess he saw my Jordan Parsons interview, and he's like, oh, I remember you and stuff. And I was like, to have that happen is pretty damn cool. Shows that I'm obviously doing something right, if some of the big wigs are kind of noticing it. And hung out with the Submission Radio guys this week. Hung out with John Morgan and Fernanda from MMA Junkie. We all went out for drinks a couple nights ago, and just kind of shot the shit and talked about MMA stories and things like that. So that for me was a big fun part. And one other guy,
let me guess, John Morgan didn't ask any questions.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry, I'm still a little mad at John Morgan because he doesn't see
the Ali thing, yeah.
Hey,
oh,
Ali.
Speaking of which,
yeah.
I'm at the area last night. I'm walking by to my hotel room, and who do I see? Catching out his chips, fucking Ali.
Jeez.
I thought that was interesting. So,
did you ask him, "Hey, Ali, are those chips going right to ISIS, brother?"
Yeah. Oh man, he would have ran after me and tried to hunt me down. One guy I got to give a quick shout out to on the show. I don't know if he's listening. Mike Dice from Fansided lent me his tripod last night. Thank God, because I would have not gotten any good post-fight interview shots. If you saw my interview from last night on my Twitter, I got some really, really clear shots, and I got to thank him for having a tripod to lend to me for the night, so I got to give him a quick shout-out as well. Also, I got to have a drink with Front Row Brian last night to cap things off.
Well, how was that? Well, I know you can't probably get into too much detail on air about that, but is there anything on air you can share about FRB?
No, just, well, I think...
No! There is nothing I can share on air about FRB.
Well, no, just nothing sort of scandalous as far as things like that. I didn't talk with him too long, but, as most people know, Brian is, part of the Flow team, Flow Sports.
I'm a huge Flow fan, but, until they can get it to be as cheap as Netflix, I'm really concerned about their business model. And I'm just saying that as a fan. Like, I'm out here on the other side of the world, you know. I want to see this content. But if I'm like, okay, I've got $20 to spend, I can either get Flow or I can get Netflix twice. Like, eh.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think it's a good model, and I don't have a problem saying that. It's a tough sell to unless you're like a really big like actual wrestling fan, not pro wrestling fan. I could see sort of the selling features there, but yeah, that's that. But anyways, like I said, guys, if you want to check out behind the scenes stuff, check out my video blogs, youtube.com/LynchOnSports. Fourth point here on the big three, which is now the big four this week. We got to talk about UFC Fight Night 91 coming up here on July 13th in the UFC's debut in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We're going to kind of pick certain fights on this card, not necessarily the main card, because there's, I'll be honest, some of the fights on here, not really doing it for me. One fight I wanted to talk about right off the bat is I believe it's going to be the first fight of the night. That's Devin Clark taking on Alex Nicholson. Devin Clark is the favorite at minus 240, Nicholson the underdog at plus 180, and Devin Clark was the RFA light heavyweight champion. I actually had a chance to speak with him before this fight and before his fight with RFA, and one thing I wanted to just mention in this matchup is that Devin Clark was training extensively with John Jones before his fight. So Clark made the move over to Jackson Winklejohn for this camp. Before that, he was with Robert Drysdale. So he's a guy that I would be keeping an eye on.
So two guys that have popped hot for roids is what you're
yes,
saying.
Yes, exactly. But I've heard nothing but great things about Devin Clark. Nicholson obviously coming off that disappointing debut to Misha Cirkunov. Looks like he's getting fed to the wolves again here. Clark is a guy from South Dakota, so I think sort of the thinking here is they want to sort of put him over, as they say. So I like Clark in this fight at minus 240. Just wanted to mention that right off the bat. Do you know much about either of these guys? Should we even bother, or should we move on?
I saw Devin Clark on an RFA card back when I was in Canada and had the Fight Network because they have the RFA cards. But yeah. I'm not going to lie. I don't know a whole lot about him. Yeah. Alex Nicholson, I saw fucking Misha Cirkunov roll him over. And yeah, I believe you when you say Devin Clark's going to be somebody just from the raw talent I saw in the RFA. I am a little concerned that both guys that you name dropped seem to be popping hot for PEDs when you say influences of Devin Clark. But yeah. I'm sure as far as UFC prelims go, this will be completely inoffensive.
And a fun and useless fact, Devin Clark was actually roommates with Mitch Clark when they were at Jackson Winklejohn's this past camp. So, yeah,
kind of really
interesting there. Yep, there you go. The more you know, as they say on
NBC.
Yeah,
I like that. That's like a Cliff Clavin kind of fact. I dig that.
Mike Bond's so jealous right now. No,
Mike Bond doesn't get Cliff Clavin references. He's too goddamn young.
I know, that's true. I actually want to talk about the fight after this one. Matthew Lopez making his UFC debut against Hani Yahya. Yahya obviously having a bit of a layoff in this one, but he is the favorite in this fight. It's minus 120. So I spoke with Lopez as well before his RFA fight and actually before this fight as well. Again, check out youtube.com/LynchOnSports for that interview. But Lopez, when I spoke with him, he was not that happy with his performance in his last fight. And I won't say he was surprised, but I think he felt that he could have had a better performance as far as, getting the call to the UFC. So he's a bantamweight fighter. He trains with Mark Munoz and Jake Ellenberger and those guys out there. Apparently, actually, really good friends, high school friends with Justin Gaethje and Anthony Berchek, which is kind of interesting as well, too. But guy to keep an eye on for sure. But, this is one of those fights where I'm going to kind of stay away because I think Yahya on paper is, probably the more decorated, more experienced fighter. Lopez, undefeated, but hasn't really fought sort of the top-notch talent. And the fact that he even himself admitted he didn't have a good performance in his last fight, I don't know what to kind of think about that. But I just wanted to throw those tidbits there for that fight. And I'm assuming...
Yeah, I'm going to go with Divine Secrets of the Yahya Sisterhood over Mario Lopez.
Fair enough.
That's my first prediction.
Let's talk about Sam Alvey and Eric Spicely. I'm a little surprised that this matchup got made. I understand why, you know, Alvey's a Midwest guy, so obviously the thinking there was to put him on this card, you know, to kind of get a good crowd. But he just fought last month against Elias and lost a decision. He is the favorite in this fight at minus 245, but he's taking on Eric Spicely, who's on the Ultimate Fighter season 23. Spicely losing to Andrew Sanchez, getting finished for the first time in his career. Spicely, if you look at his record, undefeated there, really, really good at submissions. Carlin, who do you like in this fight?
Well, it's interesting because Sam Alvey, I don't think even he would say this, looked like shit against Elias Theodoro. I mean, Elias got the W, but like Theodoro's whole game plan was predicated off keeping Alvey at range and waiting for him to come in. And then Sam Alvey just never came in. I don't know exactly what happened there. So Eric Spicely, guy with his submission skills, if he waits on Sam Alvey and waits for Sam Alvey to get maybe a little bit ginger frustrated or something,
yeah,
and comes in and, you know, overcommits, then yes, Spicely can take him down. And from there, like, he doesn't have to worry about Sam Alvey's big bombs in his hands. He can work for a choke. He can work for a limb. I hate to say this because I love Sam Alvey, but this looks like a very winnable fight for Eric Spicely.
Yeah, I'm going with Spicely as well here too, and I'm not just saying that because you know, I've interviewed him a couple times. But you know, one of the things I sort of look at is that you know, on the show, Spicely, you know, this was a late heavyweight season. You know, Spicely is a true middleweight. He's a guy that had a lot of success in CES. The thing I kind of look at here is a couple things. First off, you know, Spicely doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on him. He's a younger fighter. He's got, you know, a variety of skill sets. Obviously, I mentioned the ground game there. He's very good in that sense. But I don't see Sam Alvey knocking him out. Andrew Sanchez, you know, won the Ultimate Fighter this past week. He's a guy that probably should have just been signed to the UFC and not had to go through the Ultimate Fighter. So I don't, you know, sort of look at that loss to Andrew Sanchez and say, oh, Spicely's not that good. I think Spicely is that good, and I actually think he can beat Sam Alvey. So I'm actually going to pick Eric Spicely, and I'm going to put a bet on him. He's plus 185 right here. I definitely think there's some value on Eric Spicely in this fight. And just with the fact that Alvey has such a quick turnaround and didn't really look that good in his last fight, I got to go with Eric Spicely in this one.
Scott Holtzman is going to beat Cody Pfister. I don't know what the line is, but
Holtzman, sizable favorite, minus 300, Pfister.
Well, for very good reason, so there isn't value there, but, you know, like, you need something around on a parlay, maybe you can get Holtzman there. Courtney Casey, I think, is ridiculously underrated.
I agree.
I think she's gonna put a beating on Christina Stancy, so if you can get under that, do that as well.
Yeah, I think I will pick Stanciu in this fight, but I'm gonna throw a little flyer at Casey in this one because Casey very game, and people seem to forget that first round she had against Joanne Calderwood. Looked really good in that fight, so got to give Casey props in this one. What's the next fight you want to talk about, just so you know, we're on the same page here?
Well, yeah, Lauren Murphy, I think, is going to beat Chugawuga or whatever her name is. But Lauren Murphy is another one of these talents that is just getting kind of buried in the heap at 135. And, you know, Josh Leiberger has nothing but great things to say about Lauren Murphy as well. I think, you know, if she comes out with really puts a stamp on Caitlin, then, you know, that gets her in the mix, as they like to say. It gets her in the conversation, and she deserves to be there. I'm looking around the rest of the card, and yeah, I got nothing until Boats of Salmon, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take Josh Saman in this fight. You know, he's coming off the loss to Tannen McCrory. I should mention Salmon's the favorite at minus 245, Boats the underdog at plus 185. Just Tim Boach, so unpredictable. I mean, he's lost, you know, a number of fights that he probably should have won. I got to go with Josh Saman. Again, I know he's had a bit of a layoff. He's coming off the loss to McCrory, but I mean, he was looking good in that fight up until he got finished. So give me Josh Saman in this fight.
Okay, I'll make it interesting and say Tim Boach.
Okay.
Because the people he's lost to, I mean, the Talis Latis, you know, he's had a career resurgence. Okay, Dan Henderson, you know, whatever you want to say about Dan Henderson. And we should talk about that later. Henderson and Bisping, what a weird matchmaking thing that is. But he's still got the H-bomb, and the H-bomb landed. Ed Herman, friend of the show, fantastic fighter, now looking better than he ever has at 205 pounds. So I don't really blame Tim Boach for that. I think Josh Samana's a beatable opponent for Tim Boach. He's going to have the Irish hand grenade, a close personal friend of mine, Marcus Davis, in this corner. So I want Tim Boach to win. Maybe I'm just getting clouded.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the co-main event of the evening. It was supposed to be – actually, the main event of this card was supposed to be Tony Ferguson and – Actually, it was Michael Chiesa. Sorry, for some reason I thought Khabib. But yeah, so Chiesa and Tony Ferguson. Now
it's Landon, okay. When you think of a fighter who's pulling out of fights, you think Khabib and Nurmagomedov. So I don't blame you for that.
Fair enough. Yeah, a lot of people on Twitter, social media, asking who the fuck is Landon Vannata. Landon Vannata, of course, was in RFA. Carlin, I gotta mention this. If you're a fighter out there listening, two things will get you in the UFC. Number one, if you fight for any of the Access TV promotions, because that seems to do the trick. The last four or five guys signed to the UFC have been from RFA. And two, it's if you're one from one of the bigger camps, you're probably going to get a call up. Landon Vannata is from Jackson Winklejohn. That's probably why he got signed to this fight. Now, I got to mention an interesting tidbit about this fight because, and by the way, Tony Ferguson, biggest favorite on this card, minus 675. I think he wins, no problem. I've heard some people say Vannata could surprise. I don't see that happening. Ferguson should probably get the next title shot too. I'm that high on him. I think he's that great. But Landon Vannata, here's something interesting. So he was supposed to fight, and I actually spoke with him, did an interview with him before his fight RFA 36. He's supposed to fight Rahoni Barcelos, and Vannata actually missed weight, and the fight was actually canceled. So you know, because I guess he missed weight by that much, and so he didn't end up fighting that matchup. Now, you know, the UFC, that's usually not something that they would bring a guy in for, coming off something like that. But I guess he fought on a local card called Rocky Mountain Rubicon 2, and he got a first-round knockout in that fight. And then he got signed to the UFC. But I found that a little surprising because, you know, usually the UFC is not going to bring a guy in who's had an issue with, you know, a big weight cut like this, especially when the fight had to end up being canceled. So, yeah, people giving Landon a shot, you know, it's possible. But, you know, I kind of look at the fact that he missed weight. That's kind of a bad sign to me that, you know, he missed weight and the fight was canceled. So give me Tony Ferguson inside the distance in this fight.
Yeah, I had, you know, I've only lived in Taiwan almost a year now, but I, you know, when I first got here, you know, I got to know the local women a bit, got a really bad case of Landon Vannata, but I had some penicillin. It's all cleared up now.
There you go. Main event, John Lineker, minus 175, the favorite at Michael McDonald, plus 155. Carlin, who do you like in this one?
I like Michael McDonald to just beat the brakes on John Lineker here. I really do. I think Michael McDonald is back. I think he is part of this resurgence of the UFC bantamweight division. And I love watching the guy fight. And, you know, he's still just 25 years old. There's still so much this guy can do. You know, earlier in the year when we watched him just, you know, destroy, you know, Kanahara, John Lineker, I know that, like, people like to think of him as like the Danny DeVito to like Vitor Belfort's Arnold Schwarzenegger, if you've seen Twins. But, you know, I just, you know, he's good, but he's never going to be great, in my opinion. And I think this particular fight is going to be an absolute star-making performance from Michael McDonald. I'm so high on this guy, I should be smoking him.
I got to disagree with you here. I was not that impressed with the fight against Kanahara because if you remember, he was in trouble in that fight and he pulled off like a miracle submission, you know, getting the finish. And, you know, give him props for the finish. I'm not, you know, taking anything away from that, but he didn't look good early on. And I know he's had the long layoff. He hadn't fought since.
Yeah, he had to wake up. You know,
yeah, I understand that. I still have my concerns, you know, about Michael McDonald. And John Lineker is a guy who I just can't seem to pick his fights right. I picked Rivera against him and I picked Rob Font against him. So I'm not going to make that mistake in this fight. I'm going to pick John Lineker in this matchup. I think he gets the job done either by finish or by decision. To me, I just look at his last fight against Rob Font. Rob Font, a very, very, very good fighter, and he was able to shut him down and outstrike him. I had my concerns about Lineker moving up to the 35 and seeing if the power would translate. It definitely has. I think he's going to be too much for Michael McDonald, so give me John Lineker in this fight in the main event.
Yeah, when I look back at Michael McDonald, though, like, you know, maybe Miguel Torres is done at that point, but, you know, like, again, it's a few years ago, but I look at the way he smoked Miguel Torres. I look at the way he hung in there at Henan Barral when Henan Barral was the performance enhanced, you know, like, baddest man on the planet at 135, taking out, like, Brad Pickett. Admittedly, you know, he took a while to warm up against Kanahara, but, you know, I think he's shaken out the ring rust. And really, I do think he's going to do very, very bad things to John Lineker. So I don't know what the line is, but you might be able to get in on some shit here.
Well, yeah, I just mentioned there, Michael McDonald, the underdog at plus 155. So
really? Okay, well, there goes my money.
You are next.
All right, let's get on to fight fixing, and I hate to be the obvious person here, but you know, I was really impressed with Cain Velasquez last night, and to me, I think he has to fight the winner of Stipe Miocic and Alistair Overeem. I think the type of performance he put on against Travis Brown, going in there, finishing him, looking like vintage Cain, I think he just reminded everyone that, hey, you know what? I just had a bad fight against Fabricio Werdum. Give me that title shot. I know some people might say, you know, maybe JDS next, maybe, you know, Werdum with, you know, his next fight, something like that, but Cain Velasquez is the guy you got to get back in there for a title shot. To me, it just just it makes too much sense, and I think he poses problems for either Overeem or Stipe Miocic. So give me Cain Velasquez against the winner of that fight. Carlin, what are your thoughts on that? What is your fight fixing segment this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's an obvious pick, but it's the right pick. Absolutely. I mean, Cain Velasquez, he's still kind of the scourge of the heavyweight division. He's a man that, you know, he's kind of the specter. He's kind of like Ronda Rousey is at 135 pounds in the women's division. You always kind of like look over your shoulder. Oh my God, is Cain there? Is Cain there? You know, he's almost like Candyman, you know, if you're familiar with that film, and if you're not, you should be. Yeah. So, yeah, Cain Velasquez, Fabricio Verdum has just kind of fallen by the wayside. Cain Velasquez, he's had his ticket punched. You can make a successful pay-per-view off of him going for the heavyweight title again, and I don't see why you would not.
Interesting. Who do you like for fight fixing this week?
Well, now, what do you do with Amanda Nunes? Okay, let's talk about it. What do you do with Amanda Nunes? She's now got the gold around her waist. Misha Tate did not show what we thought Misha Tate could do there. So all of a sudden, if Holly Holm defeats Shevchenko, like you've got a marketable fight, in my opinion. You've got the former champ coming back for that. Not as marketable as what you would have done with Misha Tate in a rematch. You know, but maybe Ronda Rousey's ready to come back from doing her movies. And Ronda Rousey, you can put Ronda Rousey against a cereal box. It will do 800,000 buys. So I got to think that Dana White is burning up the phone right now saying, listen, I know Holly's got the fight coming up. I know she, by rights, will deserve it if she beats Shevchenko. But Ronda Rousey, you're a goddamn star. Come back, be my star again, right? So we saw with Brock Lesnar. I mean, Brock Lesnar was on this card because Brock Lesnar is Brock Lesnar, not because he's Canadian, even though I love Brock Lesnar being Canadian, though. But Amanda Nunes versus Ronda Rousey, if Ronda Rousey wins, all of a sudden you can do Tate again, you can do Holly Holm again, you can parachute in Gina Carano. You have three bona fide million pay-per-view fights. So you got to go where the money is. Amanda Nunes, Ronda Rousey, she'll take the money too, believe me.
Yeah, I definitely think that it makes sense for sure. You know, I was talking earlier about Juliana Pena potentially getting the shot, but you're right. Rousey is the wild card in this division. I don't know how it ends for Rousey, to be honest, because, you know, Nunes' striking looked pretty damn good last night. And if Rousey's still getting fed all that bullshit from her coach, Edmund Tarvinian, thinking that, you know, she's got some amazing stand-up, it's going to be a short night for her, similar to the Holm fight. So
I agree with that point. Ronda Rousey's coach is absolutely abhorrent. But what I can see Amanda Nunes doing is overcommitting the same way we saw Kat Zingano and the same way we saw Alexis Davis do. She's, you know, she's very, very hungry, and she wants to go out there and beat the brakes off Rousey. She wants to prove a point. She will charge, and Rousey can hip toss a judo style and armbar her. So that I think Amanda Nunes, her style plays right into Ronda Rousey's hands, quite frankly.
I think the biggest thing here, though, is confidence. I mean, you look at someone like Jose Aldo last night, that the loss to McGregor did not affect him at all as far as his next performance. He showed that he had the confidence to go out there and beat a guy like Frankie Edgar. And on the flip side, we saw a guy last night in Johnny Hendricks who, you know, since the Lawler loss, since the Thompson loss, he's just a shadow of himself at this point. So I think confidence is a big thing. I'm really curious to see if, you know, Rousey's going to be able, on the mental side of things, to get over a loss like that to Holly Holm. Because, you know, I don't know if she would take a risk like that, like she did in the Zingano fight or the, you know, any of the other fights where she just rushes in there and you know, gets a quick win. So it'll be tough to see, but that's a very intriguing fight, and I like your thinking on this one.
And now it's time for the bet of the week.
Let's get on to my bet of the week. I didn't do so well last week, but this week I got one that I think is going to cash here, ladies and gentlemen. First off, I'm going to take the over in the John Lineker and Michael McDonald fight. It's currently set at 1.5 rounds. I don't think there's going to be an early finish in this fight. I think this fight goes a bit later. Both guys, very, very, very good fighters, very well-rounded. I can't see Lineker getting finished. I can't see Michael McDonald getting finished early either. I think if Lineker wins, it'll kind of be the way he did against Rob Font, just sort of outstriking him. So I like the over in this fight, but you're not just going to take the over. You got to get some other value in here. So I'm going to parlay him with Tony Ferguson, who, again, I think destroys Landon Vanata, and Devin Clark, who I mentioned off the top, a guy that I think the UFC is setting up for a win here, a local guy, like I said, training at Jackson's, kind of one of the bright spots in the light heavyweight division. So if you parlay all those three together, it works out to plus 161. Carlin, what are your thoughts on that? I think it cashes.
I like Devin Clark. I like Tony Ferguson. That seems an easy one. Lineker and McDonald over 1.5. See, I can see your thinking. And I'm not going to call you wrong, But I can really see Lineker just like, you know, pulling a Chuck Liddell face and overthrowing on a punch, and McDonald just catching him with a smooth counter and putting him on his ass, to be quite frankly.
Interesting.
I'm not 100% sure that goes over 1.5, but you know, the Lana Venata, I got to go into the doctor again to get that cleared up, but I will. Devin Clark, you know, is a safe pick. Lineker McDonald, that's my wild card there.
Yeah, my and I should mention the over 1.5 would mean that the fight has to hit 2 minutes and 30 seconds in the second round for it to cash.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible that does happen, but we'll see what happens. Again, didn't do so well last week, looking to rebound this week. Listener questions, don't have any. Obviously, I've been busy the last couple of days, so I apologize for that. And next week I will get back on track. And actually, I should mention, finally going to get like a regular podcast next week. I'm not going away on the weekend. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be in Toronto and all that. So even though we are recording this at the usual time today, I won't be in Las Vegas. I'll actually be at home. So things will kind of get back to normal, so to speak.
Well, in that case, I'm gonna schedule a holiday then.
Well, fuck you. Anyways, let's get on to our parting shot.
Hey, I want to call somebody out real quick.
This guy was a douchebag.
You don't ever give me a face shake. I'm through. They put somebody else up and give me an interview.
Yeah, shut up. Sit down. Shut up. Shut up.
Here is James and Carlin's parting shot.
My parting shot this week is I want to give props here to Eddie Alvarez. You know, in a week where we've had so much going on with John Jones and everything else, and you know, the UFC 200 card, Eddie Alvarez made history, Carlin, you know, becoming the first MMA fighter to win a Bellator title and now a UFC title, and the way he did it was awesome. I love this fight. I love that Eddie got the win. I've been a big Eddie Alvarez fan for years and years and years. Just the fact that this guy had to go through so much bullshit with Bellator with his contract and it looking like he might never fight for the UFC, and then he gets into the UFC and he fights Donald Cerrone and he loses, and everyone was crying and saying that this guy was a Bellator bust. And what does he do? He rebounds with 2 wins, maybe not the most impressive wins, but he rebounds as an underdog, against Gilbert Melendez, against Anthony Pettis, and now he knocks out Rafa Dos Anjos, biggest win of his career. And I got to mention something too, Carlin. I was looking at this. Eddie Alvarez has not been a favorite in a fight in his last 5 matchups. You have to go all the way back to his fight with Patrick Freite to see when he was actually a favorite on the betting cards heading into a fight. So this guy, if you've been betting on him, you've been making a lot of money. But I just want to give some props to Eddie Alvarez. Great fighter, great personality, and you know, maybe not the most outgoing guy in the world, but a blue nose guy, hard nose guy, a guy that I love watching fight. And just got to give props to Eddie here. Don't want him to get overshadowed on a big week like this. So Carlin, what is your thoughts on that, and what is your parting shot this week?
Eddie looked fantastic. I can't agree with you more. You picked him. I did not. I thought RDA was going to make mincemeat out of this guy. I'm going to be quite honest, but what a great fight. And you know, just again, I kind of mentioned it earlier, just looked completely like Chuck Liddell in that fight. You know, like he could smell the blood, and then all of a sudden the hands just kept going. And you know, when he did his post fight interview afterwards, he was saying, you know, well, I knew that, you know, if I didn't put away in the first round, I was going to be in for a long night. So he did not let his foot off the gas at all. And just, you know, all the props for Eddie Alvarez, like you say, blue collar guy, hard nosed guy, lunch bucket motherfucker. You know, like, it's great to see guys like that do well. You know, like, you know, from the streets of Philadelphia, it's, you know, born and raised on the playground is where he spent most of his days, I've heard. Anyway, but, you know, like, whether it's Fresh Prince or whether it's Rocky Balboa, everyone loves a good Philly story, and Eddie Alvarez absolutely gave it to us. So, big props to Eddie on that one. I have to wonder, though, I wonder what Michael Chandler thought watching that fight.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And you know, you wonder, too, what's going to happen with Chandler after he gets through, you know, fighting Ben Henderson and fighting Josh Thompson. You know, probably wishing maybe he was in the UFC, although, you know, I don't know what his paycheck's looking like, but it's probably pretty good.
He's doing well. Among Bellator fighters, Michael Chandler is doing well. He's a homegrown product. They keep pushing him for, like, you know, the sponsorship things, like with Dave and Buster's and stuff like that. You know, he's a great guy, and he deserves it all. But I'm still wondering if he's like, okay, so like I will be Josh Thompson. I might be Ben Henderson. I think he will be Ben Henderson, but it's going to be a hell of a fight. Like, you know, like that's a pick'em to me. You know, when he gets to the top of the heap and he looks around and says, you know, it's like Alexander. Is he going to weep for there are no more worlds left to conquer in Bellator? Then we're going to see what happens. You know, we're going to see if, you know, he makes a phone call to Joe Silva or the Chinese or whoever and says, listen, can we make a deal?
What's your parting shot this week? What's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, you know what jumped out to me, James Lynch? You know, with all this controversy happening with John Jones, And I talked earlier about John Jones being John Jones' worst enemy. I talked about John Jones being quite possibly the largest self-inflicted wound in combat sports this side of Joe Riggs. I still have to wonder though. You watched that video, right? The UFC history video they did? Yeah, tonight at the UFC 200. I thought it was a beautiful piece of video production. Am I with you on that?
Yeah, except, you know, they kind of missed a few things.
Oh, hey, that's interesting, because I was just about to talk about that. Did you notice that Randy Couture was in that video, but John Jones was not? This just goes to show that it doesn't matter how much money you've ever made for Dana White. If you're on his shit list at any given moment, you're forgotten as far as the UFC is concerned. We've seen it over and over again, you know, BJ Penn, you know, George St. Pierre, Frank Shamrock. Don't you dare mention Frank Shamrock to Dana White, James Lynch. He never existed. That fight against Tito Ortiz, which a lot of people consider one of the greatest fights of all time, it did not happen. Don't mention it. So I wonder, you know, I'm very hard on John Jones right now because he did this all to himself. But does that mean that we literally forget James Lynch, the greatest naturally gifted athlete that has possibly competed in the sport? Is that where we're at right now? I mean, I know they're pissed. They got a right to be pissed. But if Randy Couture, who spent 18 months on the outside in a contract battle with them, yeah, can be included in that video, can be included as part of history, why can't John Jones? Why are they so insistent that we forget about John Jones? Remember John Jones. John Jones' lives matter.
I think it's just the type of week you're catching Dana White on. You know, it's like a woman on her period, so to speak. You know, I think that, and by the way, no women get mad at me for that. I was just kidding. But
I think you just took all the steam out of my last joke, so that's good.
Yeah, I was going to just say that, you know, I think the UFC is just pissed at John Jones right now, and as they should be. I mean, this was a huge event, and John Jones did the cardinal thing you do, and that is he found a way to pull himself off this card. You know, so if you're looking at that, you know, Dana's even said he hasn't returned any of John's calls. He doesn't want to hear from him, everything like that. Like, I am very interested to see how this happens, you know, how this sort of unfolds, because never have we had a superstar like this really screw things up this badly in such a big event and, you know, cost the UFC a lot of money potentially, you know, because I believe they were offering refunds when this news came out. So I think it's just
the
time.
Is that
true? Yeah.
Really, is that legit? I'm honestly asking.
I saw some report. I don't know if it's 100% official, but I saw a number of kind of posts on social media suggesting that. So I could be wrong about this, but it sounded like that was the case. So again, don't shoot me if I'm wrong, but that's sort of what I'm hearing. But to kind of get back to this, I think just the news of Jones being off is fresh. You know, Dana White always changes his mind on certain things. You know, Ariel Helwani's banned, and then he brings him back. You know, we know how the UFC operates, so I think that's something that is going to happen with Jones. I think he was just omitted because it's that time of the month, and this is what happened.
Okay, let me phrase it this way then, because John Jones is very fresh in everyone's mind. You know, casual MMA fans, you know, hardcores, everyone knows who John Jones is. Does it speak more that Randy Couture has rehabilitated his relationship with Dana White, that he's included in that video and John Jones isn't? Or is it just that Randy Couture appears in like big budget action movies and it's like, trying to leech off that popularity? Honest question, I really don't know.
I'd probably go with the latter. I think, you know, everything I know about Randy Couture, as far as outside the cage, you know, is kind of that he, you know, he's kind of just always done his own thing. And you know, we saw that. I mean, the whole issue with him in the UFC is that he was a Fox analyst, and then out of nowhere, he just took the contract with Bellator to go coach on Fightmaster. So I think that's sort of where it started. And then obviously there's a history there with him holding out on his contract because he wanted to fight Fedor Emelianenko. Yeah, I think
there's twice. There was back in the late 90s. He also held out as well, if you remember.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So obviously a bit of a rocky relationship, but yeah, I think the latter. I think people, you know, they've seen Randy too much and things, and I think that it was just more of like a marketing thing. Because I was surprised to see that too, and I was kind of surprised to see Tito, because I know the relationship with Daniel.
Tito. Well, like, holy smokes! I don't know how I even glossed over that, but we're acknowledging Tito Ortiz, but we're not acknowledging John Jones. This is the UFC in 2016, James Lynch. Like the man said, the ancient Chinese curse: may you live in interesting times.
Very well said. And on that note, we got to wrap things up. I got a flight to catch pretty soon, but no guests today. So just we're going to plug our stuff. Carlin, where can people get a hold of you, and what do you got going on?
All right. People can find me on the Twitter, at Carlin Bardsley. We can talk about face punching. We can talk about beer. We can talk about the reformed Guns N' Roses. Axl Rose finally has his second chance. Will John Jones? We will have to find out. What else do I know about? Canadian politics, Asian women. I'm sure I left out one, but if you hit me up at Carlin Bardsley on the Twitter, we could probably talk about it.
At Lynch on Sports on Twitter. Check out sportsnet.ca/MMA/UFC. You can find all of my stuff, post-fight stuff for the International Fight Week up there. If you want to find my video blogs, youtube.com/Lynch on Sports. You can always check out my work on MMA Odds Breaker. And quickly mention this. Don't want to get too much into this, but I'm going to be doing some stuff for Flow Combat going forward. I know they made the announcement kind of prematurely. I didn't think they'd announce it then and there, but I'm going to be... I'm gonna be working for them and doing some stuff. Still trying to figure out exactly what I'll be doing. I saw Duane Finley this weekend, but it's just been so crazy. We haven't actually had a chance to sit down and talk out the details of things. But it's gonna be video content. That's kind of the big thing. As you guys know, that's sort of my my bread and butter these days. So gonna be doing some stuff for them as well. So stay tuned. All right, I want to thank you all for listening, and just keep your hands up because you don't want to get knocked out.